to roll on with our off-season reviews. Today we're doing the Atlanta Hawks, and I'm very, very excited to be joined today by Jason Walker of SBNation.com. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing good, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Excited to have you on. So let's dive right in. Obviously, this is a huge season of change for the Hawks that have remained kind of stagnant over the last, really, 5-6 years. You know, they came out of that period in the mid-2000s where they were just racking up all these weird combo forwards, and you know, they were really going nowhere and were a lottery team and kind of a joke. And then they really got legitimate. I mean, you know, they took a step forward and pushed the Celtics, and they became a real playoff team and a good team. And they were never really a serious title contender, but they were consistently a very good team. But obviously that also started to stagnate, and then now Danny Ferry comes in and starts liquidating assets. Is a sense from Hawks fans kind of a sigh of relief that the team is trying to move forward and go in a different direction, or is there a little bit of concern over the fact that there's just no telling what they're going to look like next year or the year after?
Well, there's no doubt, Matt, that Hawks fans are definitely excited about taking this step, because I think the Atlanta fans are pretty savvy. And they know when they've got a championship team on their hands, and they know when they don't. If you look at the Braves teams on the baseball side, they were real excited when they thought they could win world championships. And then when they were just winning divisions, not so much. And that's where the Hawks were right there, as you mentioned, kind of a second-round ceiling with that core, with Joe Johnson at the head of it. And a couple of years ago, they had a decision to make, and they doubled down to see how far that core could go. And it was very clear, getting knocked down in the first round this year, that – this is where they were going to be. So Hawks fans would rather see a guy like Danny Ferry come in, make the moves that had to be made, and get excited about what might be, not just this year because things are different, but also in terms of heading into the next offseason.
You know, Johnson's contract has been a lightning rod of criticism since they signed it to him, and I've written a lot about it in the past. I wrote about it when it happened, about kind of how the market structure put them in a position of no win where – you know, if they wanted to maintain any level of success, they had to keep Johnson. In order to keep Johnson, they had to overpay for him. You look back at what they got for it, now they're getting the back end of that criticism, where it's, why did you overpay for him? And now it's, why didn't you get more for him? All you got was, you know, Anthony Morrow, Johan Petro, and the
Chris
guard.
Williams and, yeah.
Yeah, Deshaun, you know,
Stevenson.
And so, yep. Yeah, Deshaun Stevenson. So, getting those guys and then the buyout, obviously, of Jordan Farmar, that's also part of it, along with the pick. You know, were you satisfied with the haul that they were able to pull off, considering the contract and the kind of, you know, real albatross that was for them?
I tell you, man, I think most people – there were a couple of people that thought – said that, hey, there's no such thing as an untradeable contract. But I think most Hawks fans were just kind of resigned to watching Joe fade like Michael Finley or Jerry Stackhouse get old with that huge contract wrapped around his neck. Not that that's Joe's fault, but I think Hawks fans were resigned to that. So I think that just making that trade happen to give the Hawks financial flexibility, to give them hope that something might be better than second round of the playoffs was great. I think for my part, I think when I found out that Danny Ferry was actually able to land a first-round pick as well, I just thought that was incredible. Can't believe that he not only got expiring contracts, he didn't get any duds back. He maintained total flexibility for next season and got a draft pick, which was just amazing. So no, I think most Hawks fans celebrated deliriously when the deal was made, and I think they're still high.
Yeah, they moved Marvin Williams, obviously, and that's for me also. There's kind of a tertiary benefit to that where it's similar to the reason I advocated for Memphis to trade Hashim Thabeet, which is – you get that stigma off. Every time that he goes on the floor, everyone starts looking at and bringing up the prospect of what they could have had in the draft. And Williams, I think, was the biggest one that really drew that. You look at Marvin Williams, and the immediate thing you think is who they could have gotten instead. So there's that benefit. You know, do you like the move of moving in for Devin Harris? I think with Harris, my concern is that this is now, I think, the third team that's brought him in with the objective of we can retrade him and get more value for him, and the market's never there. Did you like that move, considering, I guess, you know, the low selling point for Williams?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, we've been told for the last two seasons that they tried and tried and tried to trade Marvin Williams, and gosh darn it, they just couldn't do it. And then Danny Ferry came in, fixed himself a bologna sandwich, and made the deal. And I think for Hawks fans, to get even a guy like Devin Harris, who's a nice – interesting piece, and I think he'll be coming off the bench behind Jeff Teague as a nice, as an actual functional player to be able to use for the Hawks, which I think Hawks fans were out of their mind. But certainly Marvin Williams always bore the brunt of what Chris Paul was and what Darren Williams was, and you know, rather than what he ended up being, which was a solid guy who could make it. He worked really hard at his jump shot, great athleticism, just never seemed to be able to find his place on the floor in Atlanta. Tough when Joe Johnson was holding the basketball. I think Marvin would have worked much better if Larry Drew were allowed to run that flex offense. I think it would have benefited him to be moving. In Utah, he'll get a little more as well. Obviously, he'll be spotting up. It's a good change of scenery for him, and that's another guy who, you know, I know Hawks fans were happy to be out from under.
Obviously, you know, the question is going to be whether how he's going to react to being sent back to the bench again, which is going to be something I think to watch. For me, the reason I think I'm most excited about this Hawks team is, you know, this allows the opportunity to say, all right, Jeff Teague, you know, you showed off some things in the playoffs. You know, you've really shown an ability to step up then, but during the regular season, you've been very meh. You're going to have to step up and be the guy that creates for this team. Like, he's going to make the leap. How do Hawks fans feel about Teague going forward?
I think going into last season, they were very excited and yet cautious because they didn't know if Larry Drew would actually commit to playing Jeff Teague. But, you know, for the guys that like Jeff Teague, the good news is that he's, ever since Kirk Heinrich got hurt in the Orlando series two years ago, Jeff Teague has been the starting point guard on every tip since then. And that, you know, that is a testament to keeping him out there, because a lot of the times Jeff Teague does become a wallflower on the court, and he can get lost, and he makes such an impact when he has the basketball. He can be an excellent penetrate and dish facilitator at point guard because he's very hard to keep in front of you on that end. Defensively, he still struggles to get around picks, likes to trail block, so there's a little bit of a lazy approach to defending guys. So he's got some opportunities, but this season certainly, some people say make or break. I just think it's an opportunity for Jeff to be able to show he can be a true starting point guard in the NBA. But to do it, he's got to be more forceful all the time. He's got to be the leader out there. He defers so much to seniority on that team. He has to trust himself with the basketball. And then the second thing is just being able to be a facilitator first in places like transition basketball, where Jeff notoriously has a nose for the basket. He does a great job of getting there. Doesn't finish all that well and doesn't get a lot of fouls called. But, you know, he has to look for his teammates more in transition, which is why you see Josh Smith bringing the ball up the floor a lot for the Hawks. So it's a big year for Teague to be able to step into that. And if Larry Drew does start him over Devin Harris, which everybody believes he will, that's the biggest vote of confidence you're going to get. And then the rest is up to him.
I think it's interesting because, you know, one thing obviously with the offense, the Hawks take a ton of grief from everyone, including me, for the ISO Joe offense, you know, running all that isolation constantly. What they've done, not just in liquidating, you know, obviously the liquidating the assets is good for their long-term flexibility, but I'm looking at this roster and the people that they've added, and you're looking at, you know, Lou Williams, and you're looking at Kyle Korver, and you're looking at Anthony Morrow. They've got pure shooters. They've got spot-up guys now that can absolutely nail it from the outside. And so if Teague runs more into, you know, if he's able to add his scoring but also do that facilitation and doesn't just defer to the ISO sets, you know, they're going to have some problems. I think when the offense goes bad, it's going to be bad. But there's going to be opportunities there for them, because if they've got Smith, who's dynamic and able to do so much, if they can get him to buy in, which I think is a big question we're going to have to talk about next. But, you know, if they're able to get Smith to buy in, and then Teague is able to kind of develop into more of not a pure point, but just able to facilitate more to take that step in his development with those shooters, I think there's a lot of opportunity there for them to have a well-rounded offense, which is not something they've had in a long time, especially when you factor in Al Horford's passing out of the post.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Matt. And you add John Jenkins in there, who's just incredible in summer league, showing his quick release and the way that he can shoot the basketball. And you see a team that really is built to run. I know for years you'd hear people on TV saying, oh, the Hawks like to run, but they really didn't. Joe Johnson on the team, they wanted to grind it out and make it ugly. But I think what you see here, and this is why Jeff has to get better in transition, you've got Kyle Korver and you've got Anthony Morrow, John Jenkins. You've got guys that can stick the ball in the basket in transition. You have to have your eyes wide open and hit those guys for those open shots. Hawks fans aren't going to know what to do with a lot of shooters. Their idea of getting a sharpshooter last year was bringing in Vladimir Radmanovich. So they're going to – this is upgrade. Upgrade time for the Hawks. And, you know, no one's thinking that this team is going to push that ceiling beyond the second round, but it should be an exciting offensive team. And certainly the changes that Danny Ferry has made the Hawks probably more efficient offensively, even if there's questions now on the defensive side of the ball.
You know, the Josh Smith saga, I think it's really weird because to me the Josh Smith saga is the longest ongoing drama without any drama that there is, because nobody really pays attention to it. And to Smith's credit, he's not doing what Howard's done, which is have his agent leak every 35 seconds that he wants out.
Yeah.
You know, as much as it may be annoying for a player to want out of a team, you know, I don't think it's really that unexpected considering the way that they treated him in free agency and the fact that they really haven't pushed him maybe as much in terms of marketing as they should have considering his production. They haven't really done a good job. You know, it's one thing if the rest of the league doesn't take note, but you need to really push a guy that's put in the production that he has the last two seasons. And I think it's been an area of concern for them. You know, does it concern you that if things don't go well, that situation could unravel quickly? Because it's easy for Smith to be like, well, I kind of like you out, but we're winning games. If they start losing, that could get bad. Is that a concern for you in terms of how that could affect the locker room and the overall outlook of the team?
I really think that the Josh Smith wanting out of Atlanta is over with Danny Ferry coming in. He did exactly what needed to be done. He brought a championship mentality. And, yes, you're absolutely right. The way the Hawks have done Josh Smith over the years between between Mike Woodson harping on him constantly, between constantly focusing on what he doesn't do rather than the unbelievable amount of things he does do, how productive and efficient he is. Then you go through the restricted free agency where he was basically told, go find your own deal by Rick Sund, and then the subsequent non-support of him being an all-star. You can certainly, those of us who have watched the Hawks for years, can certainly understand where Josh was coming from. Then you add in on top of that management didn't seem to be interested in making things better and doubling down on a team that obviously wasn't championship caliber, and you've got a recipe for a guy wanting to try something else. But now with Danny Ferry in place, making the moves, going right to Josh, making sure he's all right, I really, Josh Smith, nobody wants the Atlanta Hawks to win a championship more than Josh Smith on that team. I firmly believe that. And what Danny Ferry's trying to do is do exactly that. So, I mean, a lot of it does depend on what Danny might be able to do next offseason, what he's able to do with that cap space, because the job's really, when you look at it, half done. But I firmly believe that Josh Smith, because I believe that Danny Ferry will do everything he can to make it a championship caliber team, Josh Smith will be back with the Hawks beyond this season.
It's interesting because I think, you look at this team and I think if you look at a weakness, they're simultaneously strong and weak, I think, down low. Because you've got Smith who's inside out all over, tremendous, I think, defensively especially. I'm actually a huge supporter of Zaza Pachulia. I think if Pachulia was healthy versus the Celtics, they would have won that series. I honestly believe that because of the problems that the Celtics were having inside against a team with legitimate ability to do that. The Celtics never really ran up against a team like that throughout the run of the playoffs. Those injuries, I think, were the biggest impact. As much as everyone talks about the injuries of the Celtics, everyone really overlooked what the Hawks had to go through. What do you know about the Ivan Johnson situation? What do you think is going to happen there? Is he going to be back? Are they going to let him go? I'm kind of surprised that the team hasn't snatched him up on a cheap deal considering what he gave him last year.
For Zaza?
For Ivan Johnson.
Oh, Ivan Johnson. Well, I think they're waiting to see what's going on. They need to maintain some cap flexibility. Remember, they don't really have a small forward either up there, and I think that's probably more of a priority to try to understand what they need to do around that, replacing the defense that Marvin Williams used to provide there. But, Ivan Williams gave him great minutes. But when you look at him, he is an undersized guy Matt, he had a lot of personality problems. I mean, it's been well documented that the guy was kicked out of the Korean League. And he had some flare-ups in Atlanta last year. Even when he gets his first shot at the NBA, he just can't help himself in the locker room. He can't help himself on the court. So I think there's some – and, not a lot of teams really reaching out to kind of force the Hawks' hand on that. If they're going to have to wait and see how the roster shakes out, what spots they have, and try to bring him in. But, yeah, he was very productive and gave them a lot of what they didn't have last year, which was energy in the front court. With Horford out and Pachulia having to play longer minutes and only having Jason Collins and then Eric Dampier after that. Johnson gave him some incredible energy. But when his minutes got stretched out a little bit, his weaknesses were exposed. But, man, he was fun to have out there last year.
Overall, how would you grade this offseason, factoring the draft and Jenkins and the moves for Ferry? How would you what kind of a grade would you give it?
Well, you know, if you asked anybody 2 years ago what they wanted the Hawks to do, this would be it. Have this flexibility, restructure around Josh Smith and Al Horford. You'd want everything done, but they signed the contracts. They got themselves in trouble. For Danny Ferry to come in and put themselves back where they were 2 years ago, even though you've lost 2 years of prime out of Smith and Horford, how can you grade it anything but an A for getting him back on there? Then you add in the pieces that he was able to add in. And the cherry on the sundae is taking an asset like Willie Green and turning him into something, like a trade exception with the sign and trade with the Clippers. That's something Hawks fans haven't ever seen. Creativity out of the front office. It has been so long. You can go all the way back to Stan Kasten as far as general managers go, and you wouldn't have as much surprise in deals as you have this offseason. Probably the Mutombo signing was the last surprising thing that happened for the Hawks. And to see just a summer of that, how can, as a Hawks fan, from a Hawks point of view, you can't grade it anything but an A.
I would have to agree with that. Real quick, in closing, can you give me your thoughts on Jenkins and what kind of a role that you think he's going to play with this team?
Well, I'll tell you, you go back to the Larry Drew conversation, you know, how much does Larry Drew really trust a guy, and a rookie? And we'll see how he plays in vet camp. But, man, you had to be impressed seeing him in summer league. Watch him play in the SEC, and obviously it was so hard to cover with Vanderbilt. Always saw double teams for Vanderbilt. To watch him in summer league and watch how quick his release is. I mean, it's going to be one of those things where you're sick of hearing about how fast his release is. It'll be like the Dan Marino complex. But, you know, he's so lightning quick with that shot and accurate with it that he can create more space for himself by using the pump fake, which is vicious, to give himself some space. But I think that, you know, he's got some guys in front of him. You've got Lou Williams and Anthony Morrow, guys that might start in front of him. Even Deshaun Stevenson, you know, I think a lot of Hawks fans are worried that he'll get more run because he's a veteran and plays defense than Jenkins. But I think, you know, the Hawks have him cheap and they have him long. And I think eventually what you'll see, John Jenkins is going to be, you know, a lethal scorer off the bench, six-man Del Curry type guy for the Hawks. And I think to get that kind of guy with the 23rd pick in the draft was outstanding.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at the summer league, I was really impressed, you know, and surprised very much by his play. And I think that it's, you know, it speaks well that, you know, their first draft went so well from that kind of response. Jason, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. You can check out Jason at SB Nation over at PeachtreeHoops.com. They're a great Hawks blog. Jason, thanks so much for taking your time.
Anytime, Matt, anytime.
All right, join me now on the CBSSports.com NBA podcast is Michael Cunningham of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You can follow him on Twitter at AJCHawks. Michael, thanks so much for joining us today. Wanted to ask you off the bat, you know, Danny Ferry obviously moves to liquidate the roster, moves Joe Johnson, moves Marvin Williams, does these things in order to clear cap space. Is his goal, in your mind, to make a huge move in the future, or was it just to get those albatross contracts off the books to free them up to make more decisions, whatever they may be?
A little bit of both. I mean, I don't think you could have the second part without the first. As long as Joe Johnson was around with that contract, it was going to be very, very difficult for them to make any kind of major moves on the roster, especially with the new luxury tax rule going into place at the next season. You know, they were going to be a tax team that wasn't really a championship caliber team. That was the, you know, assessment that Danny Ferry made very quickly once he got here. So I think he did that to get rid of Joe's contract. That was the first part. Now comes the second part, which, you know, could even, as bad as a Joe's contract and as hard as it was to move, might be, you know, the more difficult part is then putting together a team that's better than the one that he broke up. You know, it's no slam dunk he's going to do it. It's a hard thing to do to build a championship team, but he at least now has the flexibility to do so. I think he will look to do that as the season goes on, as you get towards the trading deadline, also into the next summer with free agency and also trade possibilities. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes about doing that.
I thought it was also interesting because typically when we see these fire sales, it's a complete move, right? Where, yeah, if they're going to get rid of Johnson, they would get rid of Horford, they would get rid of Smith, especially with Smith's trade demands, and they would just start completely over, tank out, and then try and get a top draft pick to find somebody new to build around. They're kind of going more for, you know, maybe what the Nuggets or the Jazz, those guys have kind of aimed for, which is to bring in a number of players that are good, keep with the guys that they have that are so quality, and try and build a team that necessarily can't compete for a title, but is still going to be fun to watch and athletic. You know, they bring in all these shooters like Morrow and Korver and kind of shift to more putting the ball in Jeff Teague's hands, at least that seems to be the impression, you know, to try and win now and then set themselves up for a possible acquisition of a guy like Dwight Howard later. Do you see that as kind of the model that he's going for, or would you expect that if things don't go well, they could all out and out tank and try and blow the entire thing up?
No, I think you're right. I mean, that's a good point. It's not a total strip down. He kept, you know, his two all-star, near all-star caliber players in Al Horford and Josh Smith because they have reasonable contracts. You know, Josh has an expiring deal, makes about $13 million next year. Al has 4 years left at $12 million per year. Those are pretty good contracts. And if you do end up getting one of those superstars, you know, like a Dwight or a Chris Paul type. You want to have guys like Josh Al on the roster for two reasons. One is because, you know, you can't just win just with a superstar. You need good players to go around them. And two, to get those superstars, you have to have those players already here. So I think, you know, the fact that he only moved Joe Johnson speaks to the fact that he thought that was just a bad contract, which, you know, in the context of the Hawks, it is. In the context of the Nets, you know, they're in a bigger market, have money to burn with, you know, big pocket owners. Probably not such a terrible contract right now, but for the Hawks, it was. He got rid of that. And now, you know, he's going to try to get that superstar if it means, I mean, it means you might have to give up one or the other of Josh or Al. You know, ideally you keep one of them. Josh hasn't committed to sign an extension yet, but ideally you would keep at least one of those guys, you know. In a perfect world, you'd keep both of them. But, yeah, in the meantime, you're right. You have a team that's going to be pretty good. I mean, in the East, you're probably a borderline playoff team. You know, like you said, they're going to play a fun style. They got some shooters. They got some guys that can play at a fast pace. That's going to be a big difference as well with Joe Don. Everybody knows he's more of a slow-paced, deliberate player. So, yeah, the short term, you got a team that's at least fun to watch, and I think – from a marketing standpoint, that works here in Atlanta because it's not like people are coming out to see Joe Johnson anyway. You know,
right.
And, you know, I think, you know, for me, interacting with the fans a lot, they were just kind of tired of the status quo. They were tired of watching this group. They were tired of hearing the Hawks say this team is close to a championship. Everybody knew they weren't. Now it's kind of, you know, not necessarily a reset, but, you know, kind of a fresh start and a different style they can play. They can be at least as entertaining as what they played last year. Are they going to have a realistic chance of being a championship? No, I mean, I'd like to see that. But, you know, if you can't sell what you have to sell hope. And now the Hawks fans have hope because they were able to get rid of Danny Ferry was able to get rid of Joe Johnson's contract.
You know, you mentioned the fans and kind of the excitement and how it's, you know, obviously it's waned quite a bit, or if it was ever really there with this kind of team. You know, what's it going to take for Atlanta to get excited about this team? What, is it going to take Dwight Howard? Is it going to have to be a star of that magnitude?
I think so. This is a strange market. It's actually, you know, I worked in Miami before, and it's similar in this aspect that it's, you know, a football town, first of all. And in Miami, it was a Dolphins town, at least it was when I was there. I don't know about so much anymore. But
right.
Here it's an SEC football town. That's number one. It's UGA with all the other SEC schools mixed in. I mean, that's what you hear about the most. Even Tech is overshadowed by that. It's an SEC football town. But there are NBA fans here, as evidenced by when a superstar do come, you know, when the Heat do come, that there's, you know, you get a bunch of fans that come out for those teams. You know, when the Celtics do come, they get a bunch of fans that come out. There are NBA fans here, and I think, you know, the local ratings for NBA, you know, games, the playoffs are always high. I mean, they're here, but they have loyalties to other teams. You know, this is a transplant city where people come from other places. They have loyalties to other teams. The younger generation went through a period where the Hawks were really bad, so they didn't really have that kind of emotional attachment to the Hawks. But I think if you did get a superstar player, those NBA fans would come out and, you know, support the Hawks just because of that player, you know what I mean? So that's probably what it's going to take. It's not going to be easy. I know a lot of the fans here are a little, you know, apprehensive because I think they kind of got low self-esteem thinking that no superstar would ever come to the Hawks. And it's interesting that Danny Ferry, when he was hired, the day he was hired, he kind of talked about that he thought for as much as this franchise had accomplished, that people were kind of, you know, people in the organization kind of didn't give themselves enough credit. It was like he's trying to change that attitude of we have to carry ourselves like a good organization, and that's how you attract players. I think his hiring is going to help that. He gives them some credibility, and I think the fact that ownership seems now to kind of back off, and I think he convinced them that they had to change the way they do things. And I think if they can get that superstar player, people will come out. This is a good market. A lot of the players live here. They like to party here. There's no reason why they shouldn't be able to get good players if they can build a true, you know, championship organization mentality, which is what Danny Ferry's trying to do.
Yeah, I've always thought that was interesting with the fact that, you know, they have a history of success dating back to Dominique, and they've got a market that's NBA friendly, and they've got warm weather, which is always a big key with them. It's on the East Coast, which is another big key with them. It's a large market, which is another big key with them, and yet they've had all these issues. So that's always been kind of surprising. I wanted to ask you, you know, the big question I think next for everyone is Josh Smith and where that situation is going to go and how these decisions that they've made in the offseason are going to affect him. And I've heard, it's one of those, I love how the media kind of operates, because I've heard reports that Smith is unhappy and that, you know, they're taking a step back and that's not what he wants, and he's only going to be more upset than he already was in terms of his situation with wanting a trade. And then I've heard that, well, now it really clears the way for him to be the focus, and so he's going to be happier, and maybe the offense will change and the dynamic of the team will shift and he'll be happier. I've heard both of those simultaneously. You know, do you feel like, to Smith's credit, he hasn't pulled a Dwight Howard. He hasn't leaked via his agent every 35 seconds that he wants a trade and that he met with somebody or he'll only go to this team or any of that nonsense I'm having to deal with every single day of my life with Howard. But, you know, the information has been out there that he's been pretty consistently unhappy with the franchise and the direction, and that dates back to his free agency. How do you see this playing out with this change in direction with Josh Smith?
Yeah, there's a lot at play with him. I mean, he asked for a trade last year, meaning 2010-11, before the trade deadline. Obviously, didn't get it. Reiterated that desire this year, obviously, didn't get it. The Hawks had talked to the Lakers about a trade for Paul Gasol with, you know, Josh, the major piece. That didn't come together. I think that kind of got water thrown on that once Danny Ferry got here, because he would have more of a long-term view. And if you put in the deal the Lakers were wanting the Hawks to make, wouldn't it? The Hawks wouldn't have had any short-term cap flexibility, you know, and they still probably wouldn't have been a championship caliber team. So, but I think with Josh, first of all, I think he was kind of taken aback from the trade from a personal level, because he was pretty close with Joe. Joe came in Josh's second year, I believe. So, you know, and he came in kind of be the guy here, and Josh was kind of this young player that was under his wing. Joe was pretty young himself, but so they had a good rapport off the court and on the court. I think people who watch the Hawks closely would notice that sometimes when Josh on the break, Joe's the only guy he'll throw it to. So they had a good chemistry on the court. So I think Josh kind of on the personal level was like, man, you know. But I think after he talked to Danny Ferry, that kind of calmed him down on that end. And I think he respects Ferry and is kind of, you know, just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. And I think also a factor is what you mentioned is now Josh is in his contract year and now there's more shots to go around. So that's never a bad thing. I think he's still, I mean, Josh really is a pro. I know a lot of people see his demeanor on the court and everything. But like you said, he's never publicly said it that he wants a trade. That's just, you know, been stuff that's through back channels of the Hawks. So he's a pro and he wants to win. I think anybody could probably tell that when he watches. But he does want to win. He doesn't, you know, always act the way he probably should professionally on the court. But he wants to win very badly, and he still wants to. But I think now he's in a wait and see mode to see what Danny Ferry is going to be. And if Danny can get one of those superstars like he's trying to get, I think obviously that's going to affect Josh's decision. He wants to stay. Josh has said, I think he told Chris Mannix out in Vegas that he doesn't want to trade anymore. But neither has he said that he wants an extension either. So I think that kind of, you know, hints at the fact that he's in a wait-and-see mode as far as what Danny Ferry is going to do with his team.
This obviously clears the way for Jeff Teague to be put in a big role, and you wrote recently about, you know, him looking forward to being a focal point and the issues involved with that. Do you feel like he's going to be relied on as a guy? Are the Hawks looking to him to take that jump, or are they going to manage their expectations with Teague considering how he can kind of disappear at times?
Yeah, he's Teague, you know, obviously he's a very talented player. He has some skills that not many guys have as far as his speed and his quickness and his explosiveness. As everybody saw, I think as the nation saw for the first time in that Bulls series 2 years ago. But his personality is very laid back. He's not very assertive. He's, you know, he doesn't have what Nick Van Exel, the Hawks, he doesn't have that dog in him, which, you know, Nick had a lot of that, which is that feeling that I'm going to go out here and I'm going to dominate and nobody can stop me. You know, I'm quick, I'm powerful, I'm explosive, and nobody can stop that. And there are times when Teague just doesn't seem to have it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of Hawks fans that blame it on Larry Drew, but I'm telling you, Larry Drew all the time encourages Teague, you know, to get the ball, to push the ball, to be assertive, to be aggressive, because, you know, we've all seen what he can play like when he does. Now, having said that, Teague plays with some teammates who demand the ball as well, so he's always trying to have to find that balance. He came in as a rookie to a group that was already established, you know, and he kind of was in the background under Coach Mike Woodson. He was under the background with Coach Drew until Kirk Heinrich got hurt, and finally he got his chance. You know, he had a pretty good year last year. There's still some room for improvement, but I don't know if he does have that in him or not to be aggressive and be assertive. If you're being assertive and you're taking shots and you're getting to the hole and you're scoring or you're getting fouled and you're making free throws, I mean, to me, if your teammates are barking at you, you say, hey, you get out of my face. You know, I got this. I'm having a good game. You do have to, as a point guard, you do have to keep your teammates happy, but if you're feeling it, you need to go. And if anybody has a problem with that, you have to kind of have that attitude of, you know, get out of my face. This is my show, and let me do what I'm doing. And I don't know yet if T has that. You know, he says the right thing. There's been flashes of it last year when he was kind of had that feeling, you know, especially in home games and the crowd would get behind it and you could see he was fired up. But I don't know yet if he can do that on a consistent basis. But if he can, he definitely has the talent, you know, to be a very good, you know, top 10 type point guard in the league.
You know, we're doing this off-season review, but it would be likely, I think, that the Hawks would look to add a few more guys. I know that, you know, Ivan Johnson's still out there and there's really been no movement on it. And it's surprising if you only watch the play. It's not really surprising if you pay attention to a lot of the reports about his locker room and on-court behavior. Do you feel like they're going to bring him back? Are they going to make any more moves? Where do you think they go from here to fill out the rest of this roster?
Yeah, they extended a qualifying offer to Ivan. As far as I know, he hasn't signed it. You know, there's no rush on it. There's no,
right.
You know, there's no incentive for RFA to sign an offer sheet right now. You wait through the summer, and you never know. Maybe another offer comes up later in the summer. But probably, I would think that there's not that strong of a market for him at above the minimum. I could be wrong, but I don't see it. So probably he comes back, and then they have one more roster spot to get to 15. And I would hope, or I would think, that they would probably look to get a wing, because they don't really have a true wing right now, except for Kyle Korver, who's pretty much just a one-trick, you know, pony, a three-point specialist. So they don't really have a wing defender, because he's okay defender, not a guy you're going to put out there and, you know, try to stop another good wing. So I would think they would probably add a defensive-minded wing. Other than that, I mean, I think that would take them to 15. So
yeah.
Other than that, it would have to be trades, which I could probably see that too once these guys are trade eligible when you get into the season, because they're really guard heavy right now. A lot of guards on the roster. Could probably use another big as well, but that goes for any team in the league. So that's always tough to do. But yeah, I would think they would probably add a wing with that 15 spot and bring by Ivan, and that, you know, that probably would be their team at least to start the season.
My last question for you, you know, Ferry and Cleveland had established had started to establish ties to the D-League. And then when he left, he went to work, and he worked in part with the Spurs D-League team. Now, I would assume that with the Hawks' financial situation, considering some of the numbers that we've seen from Forbes, and the fact that they're desperately trying to get that team out of its nightmare of an ownership situation, that they're not going to be interested in putting forth the money to put up for a D-League team. Wouldn't you think that at some point, though, if this team is going to start going younger, that they're going to want to get a development system in place with the kind of trends that we've seen around the league? Or is that just one where, until they get a new ownership group, there's absolutely no chance of it happening?
Yeah, you're right. They do need to do that. They've neglected that for a while now while they were so focused on veterans, which, you know, wasn't a smart thing to do when you could see that as you get better, you have to keep paying guys more. You know, you had to re-up Josh Smith. You had to re-up, you know, then Joe Johnson. You had to re-up Al Horford. You could see that this was coming, and they didn't have enough quality, young, cheaper talent in the pipeline. But that's one of the things that they told Danny Ferry that they want to do when they hired him. Bruce Levison said, you know, we need to have a player development system, and that's, we're going to give Danny the freedom to do it. But I look at the Hawks ownership like Jeff Teague. They say the right things, but until I see it, I don't know if I believe it. I will say that it was pretty shocking for me to hear Bruce Levison get up there when he hired Danny Ferry and say, you know, we made mistakes. He came in, he had questions about all of them. You know, I was humbled by that. We had to explain to him, you know, because, you know, as people who follow the team and know the ownership, a lot of times tended to blame the media for the bad perception the team down here, and here was somebody outside, credible person, saying, no, a lot of what they're saying is pretty right on. So they say they're going to give him the freedom and the resources, you know, the money to do that. He obviously, coming from the Spurs, as you said, is a proponent of that. So I would look for them to try to, you know, use the D-League a little bit more, maybe not have so many deadweight veterans at the end of the roster, instead have some young guys there who might develop into something later down the line. And we'll look for that next season and see if the owners do follow through with their promise to, you know, to give them the resources to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be something we're going to have to see, and especially the ownership situation is going to continue to be something to monitor. Michael, thanks so much for joining us. It's Michael Cunningham of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You can find him on Twitter at AJCHawks. It's honestly, he is one of the best NBA beat writers out there. His work is absolutely fantastic, game in and game out, and he's absolutely somebody that you need to be following. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you. Have a good one.
All right, that'll wrap up for the CBSSports.com NBA podcast Hawks offseason review. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Hope you guys check us out on iTunes. Also, make sure that you subscribe. We've got an RSS feed. There's available for download. All sorts of fun stuff. You can follow us on Twitter at IonBasketball. You can reach me at MattMoreCBS. And you can also like us on Facebook, which would make us feel loved. Until next time, this is Matt Moore for the CBSSports.com NBA podcast.